A reading from the Holy Gospel is written to us by Luke. Jesus began speaking in the synagogue, and he said, "Today the scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." And all spoke highly of him. They were amazed at the gracious words that came from his mouth. And they also asked, "But isn't this the son of Joseph?" He said to them, "Surely you will now quote me this proverb, 'Physician, cure yourself, and do here in your native place the things that we heard you did in Capernaum.'" And he said to them, "I say to you, no prophet is ever accepted in his native town. Indeed, I tell you, there were many widows in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the sky was closed for 3.5 years, and a severe famine spread over the entire land. It was to none of these that Elijah was sent, but only to a widow in Zarephath in the land of Sidon. Again, there were many lepers in Israel during the time of Elisha the prophet, yet not one of them was cleansed, but only Naaman the Syrian." Now when the people in the synagogue heard this, they were all filled with fury. Since I'm not going to preach on the gospel, let me just give this little sermon. Why are they filled with fury? Because he just made the two good guys their enemies, the Syrians and the lady from Zarephath. Those are people Jews aren't supposed to like, but he does. That'll prepare you for the second reading. They rose up. They drove him out of town. They led him to the brow of the hill on which their town had been built to hurl him down headlong. But Jesus passed through their midst and went away. The Gospel of the Lord. Sort of sad how upset people get when you don't do what they think you're supposed to do. And Jesus hardly ever did. It's no surprise they killed him. But I'm going to read from, perhaps many would say, the stellar chapter in all the New Testament. You heard it partly read as the second reading. You've probably heard it at most every wedding you ever went to. 1 Corinthians 13. It's certainly the one passage of the New Testament that none of us can ever say we have lived up to. It sets for all of us an impossible ideal, and no one can ever say, "I did it. I fulfilled the law." Because here he says, Paul, "The law is love." Now let me just read a few of the wonderful descriptions. I wish I was this way. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not jealous. Love is not pompous. Love is not inflated. Love is not rude. Love does not seek itself. It is not quick-tempered. It does not brood over injury. It does not rejoice over wrongdoing, but only rejoices in the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Let me stop there. Love isn't something you do on a particular occasion, although that might be true also. Love is more than anything else an underlying attitude. And on any one day, in any one hour, you either have it or you don't. I'm going to use rather crude words. There's outflowing people. You can usually spot it on their face, really. And this is really a crude word, but it makes the point. There's insucking people, surrounded with boundaries, surrounded with fear, critique, judgment. You can see it on their face too. The face usually tells the story of where the heart is. So you almost have to find out hour by hour, am I outflowing or am I insucking? Am I defensive or am I exhibiting a generous spirit? And if you're not there, you have to get there. You have to practice outflowing, where you're not overly guarded, you're not overly critical, you're not waiting and hoping someone else will make a mistake so you can think you're better than them. That's exactly what love does not do. Love never fails. You see, you really can't. If you're sincerely trying to do the loving thing, then even a half-baked response is good. It's all, where's the heart at? And you've all said that. Well, she makes her mistakes, but we all know she's sincere. She intends well. And most of us are willing to overlook one another's mistakes if we're outflowing people. Now we know in part, we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. And the perfect is the state of love. It's nothing you can ever live up to, but you must know that's the goal. It's not to obey laws. It's not even to come to church on Saturday night. It's to live in a constant state of love. And those people are conduits. They invite God's healing love into the world. Really, no matter what they do, even if they do something wrong, it's good. You know people like that. There's other people, I hope it's none of us, who do things perfectly right. But somehow, no one trusts it. Because it's underneath, it's cold. It's hard. It's critical. It's judgmental. I've made the mistake too often myself, and that's the only reason I can even in part talk about it. When I was a child, I used to talk as a child, think as a child, reason as a child. But now, Paul says, I have become a man. And so he says, to be an elder, to be an adult Christian, is to be a loving person. We see indistinctly in a mirror, but one day we will see face to face. Even that line has so many implications. You know, the way Christians talk, at least on TV, they never talk like they know only in part. They know the whole picture. They know the whole explanation. They know who's gone to heaven and who's gone to hell. They know who's right and who's wrong. Where did they get all that knowledge? Paul says, to really know spiritual things is to know that you don't know. Should I repeat that? To really know is to know that you don't know anything. That's spiritual knowing. Because you've touched upon a mystery that's so huge, so big, so wonderful. You know, your best words, like I'm trying now, will never begin to describe it. One day, I shall know as fully as I am known. When you let God know you in your nakedness, in your emptiness, in your nothingness, when you let all yourself be seen by the great lover, warts and all, as we say, then you will be fully known and you will know God in just the same way. And then he lists what we call the three greatest virtues. So these three last: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. What you will be, sisters and brothers, in eternity is basically what you have loved, how you have loved, and if you have loved. Hell is simply people who have chosen not to love. Hell is not to love anymore. So you and I are still sophomores. We're still in school. Don't miss a day. Every day, all the days of your life are a school of love. And in the end, if Paul is speaking truth to us, nothing else really matters.